There's few artistic endeavors as important or valuable in Detroit as the work that the Progressive Art Studio Collective is undertaking. The first of its kind gallery for Detroit and Wayne County has a simple mission: to support artists with developmental disabilities and mental health issues, with the goal of building their artistic practices and career paths in the arts. It's expanding quickly around Metro Detroit, and their latest exhibition, Liberty Realm, was curated by James Benjamin Franklin. It opens today at a pop-up gallery at the Vela Group at 1410 Gratiot Avenue in Detroit. Starts at 6 o'clock and goes till 8 p.m. But there's a lot of other details inside of this project, so I'm very, very excited to welcome some of the people that are behind it, including Anthony Marcellini, program manager of Progressive Art Studio Collective. Anthony, welcome to Culture Shifts.
Thanks for having me.
We also have Brent Mikulski, CEO and president of STEP, which stands for Services to Enhance Potential, one of the main foundations of a program like Progressive Art Studio Collective. Brent, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
So, Anthony, let's start with you. I did a decent job explaining what's going on here with Progressive Art Studio Collective, but you've been involved with this since the start here in Wayne County. Set the scene. What is this program all about?
Well, it's a very new program. We launched it last year in January of 2021 with really the intent of kind of transforming what used to be a sort of art class, a series of art classes, into actually an open studio program that would allow adults with developmental disabilities and mental health needs create careers in contemporary art by really just following their own path, whichever way they wanted to make their work, whatever materials felt comfortable to them. It's sort of really a process of experimentation, exploration, material exploration for them as well. And, you know, it's sort of grounded in a way on kind of like a self-taught model, in that it's really individually driven. They find their own way into their way of making.
This has roots in a project that goes back to the West Coast, right? Can you tell me a little bit about the origins of this program?
Sure. Some good friends of ours, actually a studio called Creative Growth, which was founded in 1974, quite a long time ago, sort of started one of the first studios that is sort of now collectively understood as a progressive art studio, meaning that it's a studio that, you know, is built on this model of really allowing adults with, you know, developmental disabilities to kind of explore their own way into creating contemporary art. And it was started at a time when outsider art was starting to be really embraced within the contemporary art world, and they saw that as a path into contemporary art.
Whenever someone is doing work like this, I like to ask the very obvious question of why is it important at all? Why is there a need for a program like this for adults with disabilities?
Well, I think a lot of people who come and see this model, whether they, you know, have a background with disabilities or diagnosed disabilities or not, I think they just really see this as an extremely open model that almost doesn't really even exist in art schools anymore. So it's one that, you know, I think anybody would be interested in being a part of. You know, obviously for the disabled community, a lot of times programs are sort of more isolated. This is a very public program. It's, you know, it has our artists in our program will kind of engage with the public in a different way than they would were they in, you know, a program that happens more inside, like a life skills program or something like that. It's very much engaged with the general public. They show their work to the general public too, and so we really have like what I would call disability aesthetics really becoming embraced and understood by the general public. You know, a lot of people have already come into the gallery on Gratiot and walked in and said, wow, people with disabilities did this, which of course is like the response is, yeah, of course, why not,
you know. You said the term disability aesthetics. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah, so that's probably more my term than one that is generally used, but it's kind of a way that I like to describe. We don't really try to hide anyone's disabilities by, you know, having people trace, for example, images that might be projected on a canvas, or use other things like digital technology to sort of mask what might be seen as maybe a crooked line, you could say, right? That crooked line really becomes embraced as part of the work and something to be celebrated. Another huge part of this program, too, is the confidence building that comes when people start to see their work in a gallery. You know, they stand up and say, like, yeah, I made that. And then, you know, somebody comes around and is like, that's incredible. I want to buy that. Other people see it. It gets reproduced, et cetera, et cetera. So
talk more about that. What are the benefits that you've seen as the program manager of the benefits for the disabled adults? You know, you brought up that idea of isolation. You know, sometimes we don't think about how important socialization is for me and you, let alone someone that may have a mental health or a disability that they're dealing with. But there is a massive social component to what you're doing with these patrons of this program.
Yeah, I mean, I think historically people with disabilities have been sort of isolated or kind of hidden from society. That's been changing quite a lot. STEP has done a really amazing job in the last number of years really to change that by putting the people that they work with kind of out into the community, engaging with people, having very public jobs, for example. So, and this program is really along the same lines. It's trying to give like a public face for disabled artists. It's also a very social space. I mean, you came and visited once, one of our Detroit studios, and you could see how like fun and exciting it is. And it's really a space where people are kind of communicating with each other, really enjoying the livelihood of that environment.
Yeah, it was incredible to visit last year and see this studio in practice. It really, you know, touched me in a way that's very, very personal. I was amazed to see a program like this happening in Detroit, very proud to see that it was happening in Detroit. And you're right, there was friendships blooming at tables, you know, people working together, collaborating. And also, just to give people a better idea of how this works, you know, there are tons of art books that are there. So a lot of the people that are part of this program, they're looking at these art books, they're being inspired by something that they're seeing, and they create something based off of that. So it seems like it's triggering new ideas as well that they're able to put down on paper.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you'll have other artists, too, who just work entirely out of their imagination. Some people who are just really responding to the materials and creating what might be kind of more abstract work, really engaging with the color, with the vibrancy of the color, with the material tactility of the color or collage, things like that as well, yeah.
We're talking to Anthony Marcellini, Program Manager for Progressive Art Studio Collective. And we're also joined by Brent Mikulski, CEO and President of STEP, that's Services to Enhance Potential. Brent, talk to me about STEP's role in all of this. Why does a program like Progressive Art Studio Collective fit in with STEP's mission?
You know, I think Anthony mentioned, you know, just confidence building. You know, we spend a lot of our programming time developing confidence to be able to find somebody a job, being able to do something in the communities that they live in. And the Progressive Art Studio Collective does that. I mean, when we talk to the individuals, either the artists or the folks that are involved with the program, it starts with that. So anytime we can build off of a lot of other things based on just confidence, we can start talking easier about jobs. We can talk about things against social opportunities with other individuals. So it's just that building stone that we've been looking for. And as Anthony mentioned, you know, we started off with a classroom concept. We started off with looking at the skills, building those skills for those artists. And then the work and the art advisors that Anthony's been able to bring as part of the program now has just really elevated it to that next level. So now we're at exhibit spaces. We're selling product that, you know, wasn't sold before, building that confidence that having these artists be able to talk about their artwork, be able to sell their artwork and all those things has just been tremendous the past, 18 months now. So
talk to me a little bit more about STEP itself, because I'll be honest, up until last year, I wasn't familiar with STEP. You know, it's a pretty nondescript building sitting in the middle of Detroit. You walk inside, you see incredible things happening, but for people that don't know what it is, kind of hold our hand through it.
Yeah, so we're a local nonprofit. We do work out of both Wayne County and Macomb County. We've been around since 1972, so we're honored to be celebrating our 50th year during this calendar year. So what we focused on since our birth was really working with individuals and finding them opportunities within the communities. And we spend a lot of that time with employment, working on vocational support skills, finding post-job placement opportunities for our staff to work with those individuals. And again, just finding and working with business partners to be able to find success there. Recently, we realized that in addition to just doing vocational-based programming, let's look at non-vocational support. So they're not just waiting for a van, not waiting for the cab to come take them to work and that. So we started expanding our operations. So we have a culinary training program where we're helping individuals, again, vocational-related skills building in those settings to be able to help somebody find that job in that restaurant or wherever they want to work at, or just building those individual skills so they can bring that home and understand why it's important to prepare their food and know how they're and what they're shopping for versus just going through a drive-thru and ordering by a number. So we've had those programs in place. A Progressive Art Studio is another, you know, example of again, developing those, you know, those non-work or non-vocational related skills for those that want to be able to do that. And then finally, just working with our individuals on our community-based experiences, our volunteer programs, you know, again, getting folks into the communities that they live. Anthony mentioned and highlighted some of the isolation that comes along with not only the last 2 years of COVID, but also even prior. You know, some of the luxuries that we see, the folks with disabilities don't always have that same opportunity. So engaging with individuals to try and have them understand the importance of getting out in the community, getting them the skills necessary to do that on their own, and again, not wait for a van to pick them up or a staff to program something for them, building that sense of independence. So in addition to all of that, we realize that we can't do it alone, so we work with a lot of businesses to help employ and partner with us for workplace experience programs. We operate 3 thrift stores for that same purpose, to not only just say what we hope businesses will do. We've also employed 8 to 10 staff that we've trained through one of our vocational training programs who have a disability have now become our employees again. And then the work crews that also work on those at those sites be able to get those evaluations and those assessments necessary to find that next step.
When Brent, when we say developmental disabilities, when we say mental health issues, these are insanely wide-ranging spectrums. But for the listening audience, try to break out of that stigma or a generalization that people might have in their minds. Can you talk to me, give me an example of someone that might fit into this program or is part of this program?
Well, I mean, that's a great point. And when we talk to individuals or even this conversation now, you have a perception of what the disability could be. And I have just based on my experience, a little bit different understanding. And I think that is the first thing that we do with anybody is just kind of explain the type of folks that we're working with. And that could be somebody that has some significant cognitive issues that need a little bit more help. And then some other individuals that you would talk to them for days and never, ever pick up on their disability. And some are obvious. Some have some ambulatory issues that you can visually see immediately. And others, again, you're never going to see that. That's, again, the uniqueness of what we can do. It's not just, again, one type of population, one type of individual that we're serving. It's that wide range of opportunities that we see with those that we serve.
How long have you been working with STEP?
I've been fortunate to work for STEP since 2012, and in my current role since 2014.
So you've been there for a while, and I'm curious, what's your motivation to work in a nonprofit like this and directly with people like this?
Well, I'll tell you, I always go back to a story and the impact that we make as organizations and why it's great to get up every day and go to work is I was at a Tiger game at Comerica Park, and just I remember walking to my seat, having my tickets in my hand, walking around, and here comes somebody that I hadn't recognized in years, came running up to me and just thanking me up and down. And that we found an individual a job at one of the vendor booths. And again, my role, I have very little to say and little involvement in terms of their day-to-day. And then finding, again, working with that employer, working on that training skills and support, but I must have engaged somehow with that individual. And that experience meant so much to me that I'm able to see all the hard work, all the late hours, and all the dedication that our staff has to doing that type of thing, to see it pay off and a 30-second conversation with somebody that we've served. And it just, like I said, that just sticks with me and has for the past 6 years or so.
How have you seen, even in that small window of time going back to 2012, let's say, have you seen an evolution in how we talk about disability and how that stigma affects people that have mental health issues or developmental disabilities? And I mean to say, are we getting wiser? Are we talking about it with more sophistication, more nuance, more empathy, or are there still a lot of hurdles for us left?
Well, I mean, I can relate to when I first got into community mental health back in the late 90s. And there wasn't a lot of conversation about it. You may have had or knew somebody who had a cousin that, you know, may have had a diagnosis or a mental illness of some sort, but that was about it. And since that time, there has been that comfort increasing and be able to have that conversation. And it does relate back to employment. It does relate back to just being able to talk and have advocates out there advocating for, you know, services and programming for individuals that necessarily weren't there even, you know, 25 years ago. So in the shift of in employment, we have seen a dramatic turn. You used to see individuals with disabilities working at a McDonald's or a Kroger and limited to jobs like wiping down trays or bagging groceries. And that was fine. And that was what was opportunities that were there back years ago. The conversation has shifted now that people have appreciated the value that somebody can bring to an employer. So we're not just talking about bagging and wiping down trays for everyone. There may be some folks that want that, but now we're talking about great jobs with DTE, with Shinola Hotel, all of these jobs and all these opportunities that necessarily weren't part of the conversation before, that we're seeing that happening more frequent. And it is because of champions like Ford Motor Company and some other large organization that said, we're going to make make a change to our hiring practices and our diversity, equity, and inclusion models to get folks with disabilities into what they do every day. So it's helping that conversation for providers like us to be able to have those conversations. And now with the job market being the way it is, it's even better for our folks to give that opportunity that sometimes wasn't there as much as we would like to see it.
I was just wondering, you know, is there a silver lining to a labor market shortage where people that normally wouldn't get a chance, you know, employers are saying, no, let's try this, let's do this.
It's a perfect time to have those conversations. The most difficult thing right now that we're facing is just like folks returning back to work, there's a lot of hesitation or some hesitation from those that we serve to do the same thing. So we still have folks that are uncomfortable leaving home. They may have a co-occurring some sort of medical issue that they're just not comfortable. They may be vaxxed, they may be whatever, but they're just not comfortable. So the last thing we want to do is start forcing folks to come out of their comfort zone and be able to work just for the sake of working. But again, when that confidence is there, back to that confidence of getting those folks back to work, I think the jobs are going to be there at a level that they haven't seen in the past.
Certainly a conversation we're going to have to keep having here on Culture Shift. That's Brent Mikulski, CEO and President of STEP. That stands for Services to Enhance Potential. We're also joined by Anthony Marcellini, Program Manager for Progressive Art Studio Collective, which is part of STEP. And Anthony, bringing it back to the art angle of this and the work you're doing with the Progressive Studio, what makes it personal for you? What's something that has really touched you personally to keep doing this work?
Well, I think one of the things that I've talked about publicly in the last couple of years is that I grew up with learning disabilities, so I had dyslexia, and at the time, I'm sure we didn't diagnose the same way that we do now, so probably many other things too. Had a great, you know, support system, a mom and a good school that, you know, was able to kind of help me along, but it was really until my, like, early 20s, to be honest, that I felt like things started to level out. Mm. And I think, so I have a, you know, experience with understanding what it's like to have a disability. I mean, dyslexia is a pretty common one, right? But, and I think, you know, I worked for many years as an artist, taught for many years in universities as well. But I think in coming to a program like this, I started in a program called Soul Studio, part of an organization, great organization called the Friendship Circle. And I remember just walking into that that space, their studio space, looking at everybody working, so kind of engaged and excited, and all this insane, amazing work on the walls. Walking in there and just thinking like, wow, this feels like art school used to feel like. And I think it really kind of changed my trajectory, and I felt, you know, always had some, as people who know me will attest, some hang-ups with the sort of art world. And I think kind of connecting art and disabilities together, really those hang-ups, you know, just evaporated, basically. It's a space where you know, I see the incredible growth that happens with the individuals in the studio, from, you know, whether it's our studio or the work I did in Soul Studio, that where they start out with in the beginning to like a year later and where their work goes, it's just unbelievable. Their independence level is incredibly changed. You see them, their interactions outside of the studio, totally different than they were a year before. You know, confidence, independence completely changes. There's a thing, a term that we use a lot within this world called learned helplessness. Basically that people often with disabilities or any kind of issues sometimes will sort of learn how to get help from other people, because it's a way of kind of feeling better about themselves through, and also creating connections with other people, which is a great thing. But in many times, people who have that sort of learned helplessness will look to others to help them draw, for example, in our environment. Like, can you help me draw this? And you see that really starting to go away. You know, can you get this for me? No, you need to get it yourself. Everything is really based on this kind of independence model. And it completely changes. That individual sort of sense of self, sense of independence completely shifts in this program.
Progressive Art Studio Collective will be hosting a show today. It's called Liberty Realm. It was curated by James Benjamin Franklin. It opens at a pop-up gallery called at the Vela Group at 1410 Gratiot Avenue in Detroit. Starts at 6, goes till 8. I think it'll be on display every weekend through June, I believe.
Yeah, June 5th.
June 5th. So, Anthony, when we're talking about what people will see on these gallery walls, what can we expect, and what do you hope people take away from it?
Yeah, well, you know, I think I'll start with what I hope people take away is just, like, great art, amazing art. You know, I think that's probably the most most important thing, is just to walk in there and be like, this is amazing work, right? It's amazing artwork. Doesn't matter who made it. And I think in terms of what people see, at the moment, we're doing mainly sort of, you know, painting and drawing, so it's a lot of that. But some of the work is representational. Some of the work is, you know, totally abstract, very sort of gestural and kind of vivid and active. And some of the work is somewhere in between. And that's probably the best way to describe it.
There's some really incredible, I guess, figurative abstract portraits that are part of it that really blew me away. I can't speak highly enough of Anthony's work with Progressive Art Studio Collective. Please go check out this show. We're also going to get details up over at WDET.org. We were joined by Anthony Marcellini, Program Manager for the Progressive Art Studio Collective. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
As well as Brett Mikulski, CEO and President of STEP, that's Services to Enhance Potential, which we definitely have to have you back to talk more about jobs in the future. Brent, thank you so much.
Thank you.